Translation. Therefore, O Arjuna, best of the Bharatas, in the very beginning, curb this great symbol of sin, lust, by regulating the senses and slay this destroyer of knowledge and self-realization. Purport. The Lord advised Arjuna to regulate the senses from the very beginning so that he could curb the greatest sinful enemy, lust, which destroys the urge for self-realization and specific knowledge of the self. Jnana refers to knowledge of self as distinguished from non-self, or in other words, knowledge that the spirit soul is not the body. Vijnana refers to specific knowledge of the spirit soul's constitutional position and its relationship to the Supreme Soul. It is explained thus in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Jnanam parama guyam he yad vijnana samanvitam sarahasyam tarangam cha grihana garitam maya. The knowledge of the self and the supreme self is very confidential and mysterious, but such knowledge and specific realization can be understood if explained with various aspects by the Lord Himself. Bhagavad Gita gives us that general and specific knowledge of the self. The living entities and parts and parcels of the Lord, and therefore they are simply meant to serve the Lord. This consciousness is called Krishna consciousness. So from the very beginning of life, one has to learn this Krishna consciousness, and thereby one may become fully Krishna conscious and act accordingly. Lust is only the perverted reflection of the love of God, which is natural for every living entity. But if one is educated in Krishna consciousness from the very beginning, that natural love of God cannot deteriorate into lust. When love of God deteriorates into lust, it is very difficult to return to the normal condition. Nonetheless, Krishna consciousness is so powerful that even a late beginner can become a lover of God by following the regular principles of devotional service. So from any stage of life, or from the time of understanding its urgency, one can begin regulating the senses in Krishna consciousness, devotional service of the Lord, internal lust into love of Godhead, the highest perfectional stage of human life.
Read the verse again. I have to go take this medicine. I'm going to be back in 2 minutes.
Mukam karoti vacharam bhangam langayate ganin. Yatripata maham vande shi ganandina tarama. So in this section of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is talking about the greatest enemy of the living entity. in the previous verses, Arjuna asked Krishna, what is it that compels a person to act even sometimes against his will?
Stabbed.
Krishna says it is lust only, Arjuna, which is born of contact with the modes of passion, which is later transformed into wrath, anger, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. Which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. You got it? All-devouring sinful enemy of this world.
Все пожирающие верховного врага этого мира.
This lust is what seems to compel a person to act contrary to his intelligence.
И это вожделение порождает даже разумного человека действовать против его разума.
Even contrary to his will.
И против его воли.
And therefore Krishna describes the different sitting places of this lust. In the previous verse, he says that the senses, the mind and the intelligence are the sitting places of this lust. And through them, this lust covers the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him.
Через это грех покрывает истинное знание души.
It's in previous verse. Through them, this lust covers the... So in this verse that we read tonight, Krishna describes how to curb this enemy, the lust.
И в этом стихе, который мы читаем сегодня вечером,
describes this lust also to be the destroyer of both knowledge and self-realization. Knowledge means to understand that the soul is not the material body. And vijnana, or self-realization, means to understand the activity or the constitutional position of the spirit soul.
What, did you eat too much prasadam? Huh?
And his relationship to the Supreme Lord. This is called jnana and vijnana. So both knowledge of the self and self-realization are destroyed by lust. Therefore, Krishna says, this is how you can overcome it. Oftentimes this question is asked. That's why Arjuna asked it. Actually, if we study some of the questions that are asked in the Bhagavad Gita, we'll see that Arjuna was very methodically asking particular questions. For our benefit. That is the nature of a unalloyed devotee of the Lord. It's like this is also explained in the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. In reference to Maharaj Parikshit's inquiries. At the end of the fifth canto, Sukadeva Goswami described, gave a very vivid and graphic description of the hellish planets. Describing all the different types of punishments and the different types of planets that one must go to for the corresponding to the different types of sinful activities. And the first question that Parikshit Maharaj asked after he heard this description is how can the living entities avoid this? He was not asking on his own account. He was actually asking for our benefit. Because after reading these descriptions of the hellish planets, an intelligent person should think, how can I avoid this? So Sukadeva Goswami began to describe the method of atonement for one's sinful activities. Atonement. There's no other word. Let me see if it's in the Bhagavad Gita. Redemption? How about redemption? Redemption? No. Atonement on page 70 has the word. Okay? Well, it's not in that book. I'll tell you what verse it is. It's the next to the last sentence on chapter 1, verse number 43. Verse 43. Must utilize the process of atonement called prayaschitta. Process of atonement called prayaschitta. It's not there?
Yeah, purifying from sins.
That's the word for atonement? Purify from sins?
Yes.
Alright. What sentence again? Therefore, Śrīla Śukadeva Goswami describes the process of atonement. In other words, how one can become released from the reactions of his sinful activities. It's the same thing, right? It's turning into a comedy routine. Therefore, Parikshit Maharaj deliberated on each one of the explanations given by Sukadeva Goswami. Of the different types of release from one's sinful reactions. One was called pious activities. And when Sukadeva Goswami told Parikshit Maharaj that if one engages in pious activities, he can counteract the reactions to his sinful activities. But Parikshit Maharaj was very intelligent. And he said, actually, I think this is not the complete explanation.
И он говорит, на самом деле мне кажется, что такое объяснение является неполным.
Because Shukadeva Goswami was testing him.
Поскольку Шукадева Госвами проверял его.
To see if he would be satisfied with that answer.
Желая узнать, удовлетворится ли Махараджа Парикшит таким ответом.
But then, Shukadeva Goswami said, if one is situated in knowledge, he can become freed from the reactions to his sinful activity. But Parikshit Maharaj also felt that there actually was a more deeper understanding. And then Shukadeva Goswami quoted the verse. Kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayam agham dun bhakti karseha niharam eva bhaskara. That only a rare devotee of the Lord who is engaged in unalloyed devotional service to the Supreme Lord Vasudeva can uproot the weeds of sinful desires without any possibility of them reviving. He can do this by discharging devotional service. Just as the sun can immediately dissipate the fog by its rays. This was the conclusive statement of how the living entity can be freed from the reactions to his past sinful activities. And this whole dialogue between Parikshit Maharaj and Shukadeva Goswami was the prelude. You know the prelude, the prelude is? The preface? The beginning statements, beginning discussion just before the story of Ajamila. Because the story of Ajamila was the example that is used by Shukadeva Goswami. How somebody completely falls victim to lust. Despite the fact that he had such good training, in brahminical training in his youth. But he fell victim to this his lustful propensities. And throughout the whole rest of his life engaged in extremely degraded activities. He became attached to the association of a prostitute. He later married this prostitute. Engaged in so many criminal activities. He would steal to accumulate his wealth. He fathered so many children. Even up to the age of his middle 80s, he was fathering children. At the time of one's life, when he should be completely dedicating himself to the service of Krishna and renouncing family affairs. This sinful Ajamila was fulfilling all his lustful propensities. Therefore, when Shukadeva Goswami describes that a person who achieves unalloyed devotional service to the Supreme Lord Vasudeva, he can uproot all of these weeds of sinful desires. And they will not be revived. They will not again come to the surface. Whereas other processes of trying to release one from the reactions to one's sin,
в то время как одни пытаются заниматься людей, позволяющие им избежать реакции на духовную
деятельность, does not uproot these desires. Does not uproot these desires.
I lose it from the previous subject.
Where are you? I'm not even coughing now. I'm not even distracting you with my coughing. Whereas these other processes of atonement, I didn't use the word atonement, I used releasing one from sinful reactions. Cannot uproot these sinful desires. They simply cover them. But they still remain there within the heart. Even if one performs some pious activity in an attempt to counteract the reactions to his sinful activities, the desire will still remain there within the heart. And therefore the example that is used is just like the elephants bathing in the river. He comes out from taking his bath and simply throws dirt all over his body. Therefore, what is the benefit of such bathing? Therefore, to become really released from sinful reactions means to become free from the desire within the heart. This lust is seated within the intelligence, the mind, and the senses. And as Krishna describes, that the senses are like vents. You know what a vent is? A vent. That's a vent. Mm-hmm. That's a vent. What's that? Senses are like vents for the lust. In other words, just like if we are wearing colored glasses, although without the glasses we may see everything according to its natural color, but if we put on colored glasses, then everything we see is that color, tinted with that color. In the same way, the pure living entity has spiritual senses. But when these pure spiritual senses are covered by lust, which is seated within the material senses, then that pure natural desire to see everything in relationship with Krishna is filtered through the material senses by the influence of lust, and therefore we see everything according to our own enjoyment. That is how this lust works, and therefore it's seated within the senses. It's seated within the mind. Just like there is a spiritual mind. And with the spiritual mind, the spiritual mind is always fixed on Krishna's lotus feet. But the material mind, with lust present, in it, becomes the reservoir for all ideas for sense gratification. Spiritual intelligence means to follow Krishna's direction completely. One who is situated on a platform of spiritual intelligence, he has come in contact with the Super Soul. And the Super Soul is directing his every activity. Whatever the super soul dictates, he follows. That is spiritual intelligence. But intelligence with lust seated within it. The intelligence means to make lustful intelligence. Lusty intelligence means to make plans for sense gratification. Instead of following the super soul, we follow the lusty intelligence. And therefore this lusty intelligence directs the living entity to engage his mind and his senses in sensual pursuits. Therefore this lust is the greatest enemy. Because it forces a person to act in a way which is against his best interest. How do we deal with such an enemy? This enemy is seated right within this material body. Just like if we're, again, using the example of war. If we're situated in the enemy's territory, then we must be very vigilant. Vigilant. Yeah. Vigilant means watchful. We're always watching to see where is the enemy. So in the same way, we have this enemy seated right within this body. So therefore we must be very watchful and try to note the propensities for lust. Because when one becomes captured by this lust, just as Krishna explains in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that when one contemplates the objects of the senses, then lust arises. That's where it starts. Just start contemplating. And then by contemplation, lust takes over. By continued contemplation, when one does not have his lustful desires fulfilled, he becomes angry. This anger is also sometimes uncontrollable. Sometimes we see that people, when they become victim of anger, their body swells up and their face becomes all twisted and they lose all their luster. Luster. Effulgence. And they become completely consumed by this anger. And they look for a way to vent the anger. Vent. Use as a verb instead of noun. Vent the anger.
Right? To pour.
Yeah, that's all right. Uncontrollable. But not after anger. Then one becomes deluded. He actually loses his intelligence. He can't think straight. He thinks, why did I do that? And he becomes completely bewildered. And he can't be fixed in any direction. Just as Krishna also describes in the second chapter, Vyavasiyatma kabudhi ekeha kuru nandana bahushaka hinantascha bhuriyo vyavasayana. That in the minds of those, no, that's not it. Those are on this path of resolute and purpose, and their aim is one. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose, and their aim is one. O beloved child of the Kurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many branched. So, irresolute intelligence means that one becomes completely displayed off. Krishna also explains why this happens. Because in the minds of those who are too much attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence, and who are bewildered by such things, there can be no resolute determination to be engaged in devotional service. So, all this happens by contemplation of the objects of the senses. And is it explained that the process of contemplation brings one to fall into the material whirlpool? Therefore, we have to deal with this enemy, which is the destroyer of knowledge and self-realization. If we don't deal with it, if we don't confront it, then spiritual advancement is impossible. It is very difficult to advance in spiritual life while simultaneously indulging in sense gratification. It is like anchoring oneself to this material world. Like the example that Prabhupada tells about the wedding party where they all jump into the boat at night and row off into the distance. And they were having a big party. They were rowing all night long. But when the sun rose in the morning, they saw that they didn't go anywhere because they never lifted the anchor. So this is just like our attachments. When one tries to advance in spiritual life, he has to lift the anchor. He has to become freed from these different propensities, lustful propensities. So what Krishna is recommending in this verse, the way to curb this sinful enemy lust, right in the very beginning, before it gets the best of you, you have to curb this lust by regulating the senses. This is the very beginning of spiritual life. How to regulate the senses? The word regulate means that there must be some moderation. The senses require gratification. But regulated gratification in spiritual life means to use the senses for the service of Krishna. There's nothing wrong in having our senses gratified in relationship to Krishna. Actually, it's just as we explained before, that there are spiritual senses. These spiritual senses become revived by dovetailing our senses for the service of the Lord. By dovetailing our senses for the service of the Lord. Just like we were having a lengthy discussion the other night about prasadam. Because prasadam is something very important for the life of devotee. Devotee requires to have nice prasad. But in our neophyte stages, sometimes we think that it's the quantity of prasadam that is satisfying. In other words, it's one thing to be satisfied with prasadam. But there has to be a good quantity of it. And as one advances in spiritual life, he diminishes the quantity of prasadam that he eats.
It's so funny. What's so funny?
But it's not as that when one advances in spiritual life, that he loses his taste for prasadam. We should never think that that is a symptom of advancement. That one loses his taste for prasadam. When one makes advancement, his taste for prasadam increases. But he's satisfied by honoring a little prasadam. He takes whatever is prasadam and he's so satisfied. Just one morsel of Mahaprasadam is so satisfying for self. There is so much satisfaction in Krishna Prasadam because it's not different from Krishna. So this is spiritual sense gratification. Even the most advanced devotees of the Lord, they gratify their senses by honoring Krishna Prasadam. But they're not attached to the quantity. They're satisfied with whatever prasadam Krishna provides. And as they advance in spiritual life, the quantity diminishes. But the satisfaction increases. Then even one morsel of prasadam is just so pleasing to the self. So this is called regulating the senses. To gratify the senses as much as necessary. In activities which are related to Krishna. Just like Prabhupada would also oftentimes say, that everybody likes to sing and dance. This is a very joyful activity. So in spiritual life there is singing and dancing. But instead of glorifying oneself, let me sing so that I can attract the attention of others. So I can become a famous singer. And everyone will glorify me. So one can take the same propensity and glorify Krishna. Instead of dancing for others' gratification, we can dance for the satisfaction of the deities. These are regulated activities in devotional service. It's dovetailing certain propensities that the living entity has with activities which are meant to purify it. So therefore Krishna says in the beginning, curb this destroyer of knowledge, lust, by regulating your senses. He gives us all of these activities which are purely spiritual. Gives us Krishna prasadam so that we can control the tongue. Just as we're chanting before taking prasadam. Now that we're thanking Krishna for giving us this prasadam, spiritual food, just to help us control our tongues. So now we should take this prasadam to our full satisfaction. Full satisfaction means that we satisfy the self. That means we eat whatever is necessary to maintain this body. We satisfy the senses in this way. Of course, in the beginning, we may have to eat a little bit more. And Prabhupada knew that. Prabhupada knew that when the devotees are taking to spiritual life, they are giving up so much that they have to have something to replace it. Therefore he said, prasadam is our greatest weapon. One of my favorite stories that I always like to tell. In the early days when Prabhupada would serve out the feast himself. He would cook a feast of so many different preparations. And then he would personally serve it with his own hands. And as soon as the devotees began eating from the plates, whenever there was a space on the plate, Prabhupada would come and fill it up. The devotees were thinking, wow, Prabhupada's giving this to us. I have to take it. Otherwise he wouldn't give it to me. So they would continue eating from their plates. And Prabhupada would come around again and fill up the plates. And he'd keep on going around the room. And the devotees' plates would never get empty. Because Prabhupada would always keep them full. So after some time, the devotees just couldn't eat anymore. And they would be sitting there holding their stomachs up against the wall, barely able to breathe. And all of them would be like that. When every last devotee was finished and could not eat anymore, Prabhupada looked at them and said, "Oh, you do not like Indian cooking?" Prabhupada knew. Expert. The spiritual master knows how to regulate the senses of the disciples. That's why Maharaj Krishna likes traveling with me so much. Go ahead, you have to translate it. Of course, he'll never take prasadam without first asking. Very good quality. I have to say that. If I forget to tell him to take prasadam. He'll make sure he asks. This is how we regulate the senses. Of course, we regulate the senses in other ways as well. We rise early in the morning. This is another way to regulate our senses. Just like we may have this experience that when we want to rise early in the morning, the alarm clock goes up. And the first thing we think is, I'm still tired. The first thing. Maybe 5 more minutes. As a matter of fact, in the West, they have these alarm clocks. They're called snooze alarms. Snooze. A snooze is a short sleep. Very short sleep. It's a snooze. They have them here too? It's so that you can push a button and get 5 more minutes. And you push it again and get another 5 minutes. Because everybody knows, the materialists know that that's the mentality of the mind. But regulating the senses means that one has to learn that when the alarm clock goes off, he has to know that the first thing my mind is going to say is that you're still tired. Therefore, one should immediately get up. That's why Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta gives the example that the method of controlling the mind is that in the morning we should beat it 100 times with a shoe. That is how we control the mind. So we regulate this. We regulate our activities by getting up at the same time every day. And gradually when we get up at the same time every day, the mind becomes controlled. Just like another example is on Ekadasi, one will never think of eating grapes. On Ekadasi, one would never think of eating grains. We know that on Ekadasi, one must refrain from eating grains. So, on a particular day that's not Ekadasi, we may see this very opulent prasadam. And it's all grains. And we'll be thinking, boy, I really want to take this prasad. And our mind will start dwelling on it. But if it's a Ekadasi, immediately the mind will think, no, I can't take this. It's disciplining the mind. After some time, if it's a kadasi, we'll never think of eating grains, even if it's the most opulent prasadam. Therefore, now, this is another way we regulate the senses. With the intelligence and with the mind, we learn how to discipline the senses to perform the devotional activities in a regulated fashion. And what happens is that gradually by that regulation, Mr. Lust can be defeated. This is how to control the lust. But if we're completely unregulated, then whatever impulse we have, we do it. In other words, if we think, well, I'll sleep late tomorrow, I have nothing very important to do in the morning. In fact, I have nothing very important to do in the afternoon either. So I can just sleep late, I'll check my job in the afternoon. So one's mind starts going this way. He can't control this lust. Lust will take him over. We always see that those devotees who have very difficult times controlling their mind and senses, are those devotees who do not perform regulated devotional service. Because they have nothing to discipline the mind and the senses with. Because they're following the dictation of lusty intelligence. And their lusty intelligence is telling the mind and senses just what to do. Therefore, Prabhupada explains that spiritual intelligence, for those who are not on the platform of advanced platform of devotional service, whereby they can follow the directions of the super soul within the heart, the spiritual intelligence is to follow the instructions of the spiritual master. And the beginning stages of devotional service are Vaidhi Bhakti. Means that when the spiritual master says to perform these regulated activities in Krishna consciousness, that every time the mind says something else, we must immediately defeat it with the superior intelligence and say, no, I must do it. It's not a question of maybe. That cannot be a question in the mind. Vaidhi Bhakti means, I must do it. He must have that conviction that my lusty intelligence won't bring me any peace of mind. And Krishna says in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that there can never be peace of mind. If there's no peace of mind, there can never be happiness. We want to be happy, but if our mind is not peaceful, how will we ever be happy? There's no question. Therefore, that is the beginning of devotional service. Is that we must follow the instructions of regulated devotional service given by the spiritual master. This is how we defeat Mr. Lust. So, therefore, Krishna is recommending here in this verse that in the very beginning, curb this sinful enemy lust by regulating your senses. Of course, Prabhupada says in the purport that even if we don't do it right from the very beginning, that any point in our life when we understand the urgency of becoming Krishna conscious, that if we take up regulating the senses at that point in our life, then that is just as good. One must understand the urgency, that is all. As soon as one understands the urgency, then he must take it up. Therefore, we perform these prescribed regulated activities. We regularly chant the holy name of the Lord in the early morning hours. We regularly worship the deity during the Brahma Muhurta, which means at least 1.5 hour before sunrise. That is why in every temple Mangal Arati is usually at 4:30. Of course we understand that sometimes that sometimes there are certain circumstances which will not allow us to have early Mangal Arati. When your neighbors are constantly calling the police. So therefore there maybe have to be a Mangal Arati a little bit later. But that doesn't mean, oh, I can get up later. That means we do everything else before Mangal Arati. We should chant all of our rounds before Mangal Arati. And in this way, if we rise early in the morning, chant our prescribed rounds, worship the deity, honor Krishna Prasadam, and hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Nasta Payeshu Abhajeshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevya. By regularly hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. Same point. Must be regular. Regulated activity. Then all these activities will purify the heart. So, this is the beginning stages of devotional service. This is with any sincere disciple who wants to advance in spiritual life. He must take up this regulated process of devotional service so that he can curb this lust and be properly engaged in devotional service. Otherwise, if he does not regulate his senses, he will be controlled by his senses. Godas. Godas means servant of the senses. It's like Goswami means master of the senses, and Godas means servant of the senses. So if we become servants of the senses, then we'll never be able to go back to Godhead. So, this is some of the understanding that we get from this verse. Any questions? Not related? Or are there any related first? Related questions first?
Привязанность к этому?
Да.
Почему?
Привязанность к этому.
You just explained about the importance of regulated diligence, but if when the body is not so attached to regulated diligence, is there any other types of, are there any other types of devotional service as it's explained in nectar devotion?
As explained in nectar devotion? Not explained in nectar devotion.
Это не объясняется в нектаре
Бхакти. The nectar devotion explains that the beginning of devotional service is Sadhana Bhakti. Which means regulated activities as well. Of course, there are others. There are, it's not that one cannot be engaged in devotional service. Certainly one can engage in some service. But it would be very difficult to advance. Oftentimes we see that happens. That people become attracted to association of devotees. And they want to assist in some way, engage in some service. So they come for some time and perform some service. But they lose their determination. So in other words, they've engaged in some service. But because they did not make progress, they lost their determination to continue. And therefore became once again attracted by the obligations of the material world. The point is that the living entity is always under obligation. And unless we feel obliged to follow the instructions of the spiritual master, then Maya will have her agents who will oblige us. We have to follow this. We have to be obliged to somebody. So therefore we become obliged to our mind and our senses, to family, friends and society. There are so many social obligations which are constantly pulling at us from every direction. So if we don't feel these obligations to the instructions of the spiritual master, we'll get pulled by these other obligations. Therefore, as one advances, he realizes that he must perform these activities, Krishna consciousness. Of course, it's very difficult to do it alone. And therefore, association of devotees is very important. If we're alone, when the mind says, oh, just sleep. There's no other activity going on. And the only other dictation that's there is our mind. The only other dictation that's present with us is our mind. So the mind takes us over. But if we have association, then the devotees can help each other. Just like if one is sleeping in the ashram, and there are some other devotees there. And when the alarm clock goes off, and everybody gets up, and there's so much activity going on, we can pull the blankets over our head and try to fall back asleep. Make believe nothing's happening. Let everybody step over us. But we can realize, I'm not going to be able to fall back asleep. I just get up. It's helpful to be in the association of others. Because we can help each other. We feel obliged that everybody else is up, I should get up too. At least that's the way it should be. So they may be willing to undergo so much personal inconvenience. Stand in line for 6 hours. Such as standing in line for 6 hours. Just so they can get different varieties of food for the deities. Better to meditate on giving varieties to the deities. Because that it's very purifying. Just like the story of Madhavendra Puri. He was sent to a distance of over 1,000 kilometers. He had to walk, undergoing so much personal inconvenience. And he had to carry 80 pounds of sandalwood. In order to grind into a paste to bring down the fever of the Gopal deity. He had to carry the sandalwood for over 1,000 kilometers walking. So he was, because he was so willing to satisfy his Lord, his worshipful Lord, he was prepared to undergo any inconvenience necessary. The Lord appeared to him in a dream while he was walking back. And it just so happened he was in the village of Vimuna. And the Lord told Madhavendra Puri that you take all this sandalwood that you are carrying and right where you are you grind it up into paste and smear that sandalwood paste on the body of Gopinath who is there in the room. Because Gopinath and myself are non-different. When you smear the sandalwood paste on his body, it will bring down my fever. So the Lord did this So the Lord did this. Simply to ease the burden of his devotee. Because the devotee was so completely willing to accept the great burden for the Lord. And Madhavendra Puri is glorified for this pure devotional service. So if we can get some nice varieties of preparations to offer to the deities, then this is very
good.
Then it's important. And of course, whatever is offered to the deities becomes prasad. We know what happens next.
Куда следуют те люди, у которых каменные очки, а на них написано, там, так учит Гуру, так учит Кришна.
We used very nice example in which people who are seen through colored glasses, like simple glasses. But he said, then can you please explain us where, what is the destination of these people who are?
What is the what? Destination?
Destination of people who are seen through stone glasses. And these stone glasses are labeled with signs that is as Krishna said and that is as spiritual master said. Some kind of...
I don't understand the question. The question doesn't make any sense to me.
Вопрос, то есть невозможно понять. Ничего голову не приходит.
It means that these people are acting like on behalf of Krishna.
But that means the glasses aren't stone.
Если эти люди говорят, что они действуют от имени Кришны и Гуру, это означает, что их очки делают совсем.
It means they're crystal clear. Because that's how we're supposed to act. We're supposed to mold our lives around the instructions of Guru and Krishna.
If
we don't, we'll just mold our lives around our own lusty intelligence. What's he going to do? Саша, what's he going to do? He wants to ask the question. Well, you should explain to him that you can't understand his question.
Вы
знаете,
да, я должен извиниться, я не могу просто понять ваши вопросы, только перевести его.
Я хотел бы попросить, чтобы Гуру Махарадж... Я хотел попросить бы, чтобы Гуру Махарадж осветил такой вопрос, как Пракрита Бхакти и, что, как говорится...
Конечно.
Да, конечно, Китай.
Конечно.
И, значит... что ждет этих людей впоследствии, если они не перейдут определенную ступень? Какие опасности
not advance.
Falta.
Any padre.
Unless the Kanishtha Adhikari can come to the platform of Madhyama Adhikari, he falls down.
Если Кришна Адхикари не поднимается до уровня Мадхьяма Адхикари, то он падает.
Более
подробно.
Подробнее, пожалуйста.
In more detail? Mm-hmm. We asked what the destination was, actually. So just told him.
Вы спросили, какая у себя ожидание по
Нефесе. Может, неправильно сформулировал вопрос.
The point is that Prakriti Bhakta means that one is who is still too much attached to sense gratification.
Важно помнить, что Prakriti Bhakta означает тот человек, который еще сильно привязан к чувствам привязанности.
And he still has a very materialistic outlook of devotional service. But he still has a very materialistic outlook on devotional service.
И взгляд его на преданное служение все еще очень материальный.
He thinks that Krishna is only in the deity. And it does not see Krishna in the hearts of other living entities. And because the Prakriti Bhakta cannot see Krishna in the hearts of other living entities, generally such materialistic devotees commit offenses to other devotees. Because they're too much attached to the sense gratification and comfort. And by committing offenses to other devotees, and not seeing that Krishna is in their heart, in the heart of every living being, then by those offenses, he falls down. One cannot commit offenses to devotees and expect to remain in devotional service. It is simply a matter of time.
Есть спорт, а есть физкультура, которая немножко не одно и то же.
Давайте. In one of his lectures, Shri Prabhupada explained that sport is just empty use of time.
Sport?
Sport. Yeah.
Frivolous sport. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What to do if our body requires some
go on and hurry now. Check and dance. That's what Prabhupada recommends. Of course, sometimes you may have to do some exercise. There are certain Vaishnava sports that are accepted.
Потому что есть разные виды спорта, которые принимаются как вайшнавы.
Such as swimming.
Например, плавать.
And then accept it, is
it? Это принимается.
To go and swim in the Ganga.
Это приемлемо. Ну, за Ганги,
пожалуйста. Very good exercise.
Очень хорошее время.
But not frivolous sports. Frivolous, but not, one should not engage in frivolous sports. Yeah.
No.
What are you going to do?
Распространение книг.
Like fighting.
Like fighting?
I shouldn't be engaging.
By
fighting?
No. Of course, sometimes there's a few wrestling matches here and there. Sometimes there's a few wrestling matches here and there.
Wrestling matches?
Please don't try to translate it. Oh, no, it's going to come out of that.
It's uncommon.
Что ты не переводишь?
Ай, ладно.
Лекция про это.
Constitutional position of living entities, he must be subordinate to someone. He can't get out of that position. Try any way you want to, but you must be subordinate to somebody. So either one is subordinate to Krishna, or he becomes subordinate to Maya. That's the extent of the extent of the living entity's freedom. So either you become subordinate to Krishna, or you listen to Maya. That's right. And when you suffer enough by following her instructions, then you'll take shelter of Krishna. That's how, that's her service. Her service is to give you what you want. And she'll provide you all kinds of facilities for sense gratification. There's only one small catch. You can't be happy. That's all. Krishna is in our hearts.
Krishna находится в наших сердцах.
And he knows exactly what we need to make progress to come to him.
Он точно знает, что нам необходимо для того, чтобы прогрессировать.
In the beginning of the devotional service, Krishna helps us by encouraging us.
И в начале этого служения Кришна воодушевляет нас, помогает.
He gives us some taste.
Он дает нам какой-то вкус.
In devotional activities. So that we may become encouraged to feel that this we're moving in the right direction. However, we should not become attached to that taste that we get in devotional service.